Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hi, this is Billie Jean King.
This is Marion Bartoli.
I'm Mats Wilander.
This is Mary Carrillo.
I'm Stan Wawrinka.
I'm Leighton Hewitt.
I'm Andy Murray.
This is Yannick Noah, and you're listening to the Tennis Podcast.
Well, Richard Gasquet fans might not enjoy this podcast because while we're recording at 12 minutes past 8 UK time, 12 minutes past 9 French time, with only one game played of Gasquet against Nadal, we all feel quite confident about recording this, assuming that Rafael Nadal is going to win that match fairly comfortably and that a miracle isn't going to befall Richard Gasquet tonight and it's not going to suddenly be out-of-date tennis news, as much as our fans do enjoy that. How confident do we feel about this result, having watched 4 points of Nadal against Gasquet, chapter 18?
I would say pretty much as confident as about any result that there is in the draw.
Oh, you sound like a man on the verge of using the phrase foregone conclusion.
If I was going to use it, it would be for this match. I mean, happy birthday, Rafa, by the way. 35 years of age today.
Yes, it's like someone has served him a birthday platter in the form of Richard Gasquet, your dream opponent.
They came along at the same time. They both sort of came along as these prodigious juniors, 15 years of age, making their debuts and loads of hype about them all. And we've seen this a lot. It's so fascinating to watch a junior come along and make the transition and then so many years later, you put them side by side and one's got double-digit Grand Slams and the other one hasn't. And it's always quite interesting to see that process. I always remember Gael Monfils was an incredible junior. I remember him watching him win the junior Wimbledon final and he won 3 Grand Slam titles that year in the juniors. And today I've seen him and he's still great to watch, but he's never reached a Grand Slam final and that would have seemed crazy back then.
You were in the locker room with Richard Gasquet before this match, Matt. I don't know why, but you're there. Mm-hmm. What are you
What's
saying
it like,
to him?
Matt? Is it good in there? Can you bring us some stuff?
I'd imagine quite a sombre atmosphere. What are you saying to him? How do you get him to believe?
Of all the questions I've ever been asked on this podcast, that might be the hardest. I don't know. I haven't got the foggiest.
Would you say hit backhands from your forehand corner? Because it feels like someone has said that to him.
That's what he did on the first point. Yeah. I'm always intrigued by how broadcasters hype up a match like this, you know, because everyone's thinking the same thing. And David, you were telling us that Alex Correia on Eurosport just made the point that, you know, perhaps nerves have shrunk Richard Gasquet in the past at the French Open. Playing in an empty arena might be some sort of opportunity for him to just open his shoulders and see what he can do. But it feels like clutching at straws, doesn't it? I mean, to me, the very fact that Nadal comes on with his own branded mask and Richard Gasquet's there in his disposable one just sort of tells the story right there in a very pandemic way.
Yeah. Oh, it's. I think it's Breakpoint Nadal. Yeah, it's Breakpoint Nadal.
Maybe I'm really naive, but I just don't understand, if you're Richard Gasquet, why you don't just come out and try and blitz the ball. And you know, this
well, is that
guy...
what you would say to him, David?
Yeah,
Mr.
It is.
Motivator David, you're in the locker room with him. Matt's been pushed out on his ear. What would you say?
I would play him a video of Rocky III when Paulie says to Rocky, when he's about to face Mr. T, he says, just go out and kill the guy. That's what I'd say. And then I would show him a video of his 2007 match against Andy Roddick when he's, I think he was two sets to love down. And I think he hit about 80 backhand winners. And I commentated on that match. And I mean, it was just extraordinary. And he wasn't rallying like this. He was just going for broke.
There we go. Prep for playing Nadal at Roland Garros in 2021 is a video of playing Andy Roddick on grass at Wimbledon in 2007, was that?
Yeah, just the 14 years have passed.
To be honest, that already looks like better prep than what Richard Gasquet has been told before this match. It's not panning out for him so far, but I know you're on the edge of your seats, so we'll keep you posted.
Will this get edited if he's won?
I think we will owe it to Richard Gasquet to record an entire new podcast if he wins. And I say that confident in the knowledge it won't happen. It's been quite a day, hasn't it? A thoroughly entertaining day, but for one massive low point, and that was the loss of Ash Barty, the top seed and one of the two defending champions on the women's side, depending on how you look at it. She retired today, trailing by a set to Magda Linette. She said after the match she just had no choice. It's the hip injury that she was clearly hampered by in the opening round. She came out with that hip heavily strapped again. She says it's a new injury. It's not one she's felt before. It's acute. She says her team know what they're dealing with, and it just takes time. So it's just a race against time for Wimbledon and the grass courts now. She was measured, as you'd expect. She didn't give too much away. But she gave about as much away as I've ever seen from Ash Barty. It was clear she was gutted, perhaps not in her demeanour. She was very controlled in her demeanour, but in her words, you know, she kept saying, this is tough. She kept saying, you know, I was in great form. She clearly felt so confident. And, you know, she said for my body to be the thing that lets me down, I think she feels a real injustice in that because she's so supremely fit. A really sad sight today. I guess we're prepared for it a little after her first round match. We lowered our sights considerably for Ash Barty, but nonetheless, to see the former champion limp off the court that way was distressing.
I mean, we didn't get to see the injury as it happened because it happened in practice, but it sounded very much like the Simona Halep one in Rome, where you just... What's happened there? I mean, that's just out of the blue. And I agree with you. I didn't see the press comments, but I read those quotes and I did think there is a woman who she was nigh on. I don't think Ash Barty could ever be accused of being smug, but she was as close to sounding smug as possible before this tournament. The fact that she'd had that week in the south of France on our own clock, enjoying life for a week and then coming up here and clearly just brimming with confidence. Everything's right. Everything's ready. She's had all these months on the road. She's feeling fresh now, playing the best tennis of her life, and that happens. It's cruel luck, really.
Yeah, it's an enormous shame. I think she's only retired from four matches in her whole career, and two of those have been in the last couple of weeks. And she said they're very different. I think the Rome injury was, I think in her words, an accumulation of load. She'd been playing a lot since she took the trip over from Australia, and it just all caught up with her a little bit in Rome, whereas this was an acute incident, she said, you know, just a freak thing landing on her serve in training. And yeah, it's an enormous shame for her and for the women's draw. Quite frankly, I mean, there's still fabulous players left in the tournament, but I just can't help but think that we've lost so many names from this tournament and not had the joy of having the sort of exciting upset at the same time. You know, Halep wasn't even in the draw. Barty's had this. Osaka withdrew. Kvitova had to withdraw. We had Muguruza and Andreescu not quite ready. It's been a tough first week for the women, I must say. Just from that standpoint, so many exciting players, and they've all just sort of had this bad luck, really.
The three top players in the world are no longer in the draw, and none of them lost the last point. I know Halep was never in the draw. She pulled out just before, didn't she? But pretty extraordinary state of affairs to be in. If you'd told us all a week ago that that's where we'd be, we would have scarcely believed it, I think. I mean, considering all of that, I'm amazed at how unweakened the women's draw seems. I mean, obviously it's depleted. Obviously we would far rather those names that you mentioned still be in. But it's standing up pretty well, I think, to the knocks that it's taken. We've got, I mean, the loss of Barty, it's big for Ons Jabeur, who now faces Magdalenet for a place in the second week. It's big for Coco Gauff and Jennifer Brady. They will meet in the third round for a place in the second week. I don't know, I haven't actually checked that she's okay with me saying this, but Hannah that runs our Twitter during the Grand Slams, hello Hannah, she's great, follow us on Twitter if you want informed, irreverent brilliance from Hannah. Hannah thinks that Coco Gauff is going to the semi-finals, and when she said that, I looked at her draw and I thought, yeah, maybe.
Yeah, I mean, this is the first tournament that I've seen Coco Gauff in where I don't think of her as just an up-and-comer who's making a mark, but is not relevant to the tournament and what will end up happening. Now she feels relevant. She feels, I mean, I think we're still caught between the two, and we probably will be for another 18 months or so. When she's 19, 20, I think she could be absolutely a threat for the titles. But her game stands up. I mean, to me, at least from the baseline, I think that the serve is still questionable at this level because of the number of double faults, etc. She's going to get better, but I mean, heck. The stride she's taken this year surprised me.
Will she get past Brady? Who's the favourite in that one?
I think she's probably the favourite based on form.
She being Gauff?
Yeah, Gauff. She's won, what, 11 of her last 12 matches, I think. And just at this stage in her career, feels a little bit more comfortable on the clay compared to Brady. I think Brady's certainly got a game that can work. I watched quite a lot of her match today against Fiona Ferro, which was a cracking match. You know, the Simone Mathieu Stadium was really rocking by the end. Just there's something about a French player playing in France with a unique atmosphere, and there's something about Fiona Ferro that seems to really connect with people. She's kind of like, she feels like one of them, like one of the crowd. She's sort of disarming in that way and unassuming. And I think they really get behind her. So Brady did very well to win through in that atmosphere. But I think Gauff's playing better tennis at the moment than Jennifer Brady. So I would just go with Gauff based on everything David just said there.
Furrowed brow from David during that answer, Matt.
Well, I'm my main feeling is how much I'm looking forward to watching it, because I really enjoyed Brady against Ferro. I didn't get to see all of it, but there's two players that we just discovered in the last year, and they bring something to the table, and they're quite similar in terms of levels, and they looked really closely matched. And then to now have Gauff meeting the winner, that's a really fantastic prospect. If they're both fully fit, I could definitely see that being tight. I would have probably thought Brady would have been the favourite just because she's older. But like I say, Gauff is just generally accelerating her development before our eyes in a way that I really wasn't expecting this year. I still thought this would be a real development year, and I think it is that, but she's just looking the part more.
Well, speaking of matchups that we're looking forward to in round number three.
Thought that dog went to the play date with Neville to tire her out.
She did. Listeners will never know the length that I've gone to try and keep Billie Jean quiet during this podcast recording. And they were so successful for 13 whole minutes. She will settle down, folks.
Is it another squirrel?
I think she's going through a guard dog phase. She thinks there's someone at the door. I don't know what her her plan actually would be if there were an intruder. I don't think she would be able to follow through. She's her Bach's writing checks that her physicality can't cash.
I was going to say, it's like some wimp in a pub just kind of
yeah,
squaring up to
that.
People.
Anyway, bless her, she's trying. Let's press on. If you're looking forward to that one in round three, David, how about Sloane Stephens against Karolina Muchova? Stephens was just sublime today. I thought she was like velvet. That's another Hannah-ism. She beat Pliskova 7-5, 6-1. The seven seed Pliskova, the Rome finalist, but was that an upset?
Well, the thing is, it's an upset in terms of what they've done over the last couple of years and their stature in the game, ranking and all the rest of it. But I think probably all three of us, if you'd align those two up and said, right, they're both going to play the best today, who's going to win? Sloane Stephens is going to win. She's just a more talented tennis player, really. I mean, my mind does go back a little bit as well. I think it was back maybe during Miami or somewhere around there. Dan Evans was watching her on the TV at one of the tournaments he was at, and he was transfixed by her. He just thinks she's the most talented woman in the world in tennis. And I mean, and that's sort of a player's player view. I think that other players watch Sloane Stephens. She's that good.
Interesting.
I'm pleased to hear that, because that's how, as a layperson, I feel about her. I'm looking at her game thinking, what would you change here other than make her able to produce this week in, week out? But she's obviously just not that kind of character. And we do accept that not, you know, mental toughness and resilience, etc., that's a skill in itself, and some have it and some don't. You know, Wawrinka's always talked about that, hasn't he? He just says, I'm never going to, even at his peak, he said, I'm never going to be the guy that can do this week in, week out and summit the rankings. But yeah, what would you change in her game?
Oh, nothing. I mean, when she's on, she's as good as anybody that's picked up a racket that's active today, I think, pretty much. I also think, I mean, she's had a really tough year, hasn't she? And it's really quite heartwarming to see her out there doing what she loves to do and doing it well.
And there does, I don't know if you saw the post-match interview with Sloane Stephens, Matt, but there does seem to be something just a bit different about her. She seems content. She seems happy to be there. She definitely seems bruised by the year she's had. I think
she's
definitely
lost relatives, hasn't she?
She lost two relatives to COVID-19 in very quick succession, and then had very soon after that had to spend 2 weeks in hard quarantine in Australia after, you know, suffering this awful period of time with her family. And well, we can only imagine how tough that must have been. So there's, on one hand, there's a sort of soberness about her, but there's also a contentment, I think, with being on the tour. I'm reading between a lot of lines here because she doesn't give that much, but I don't know. That's the sort of disposition. That's what I'm reading into her disposition at the moment. And I realised today how invested I am in the possibility of Sloane Stephens returning to the kind of tennis that won her the US Open and got her to the French Open final. I want it more than I had previously admitted to myself.
Yeah, and you got a little taste of it today because she
it's
was...
It's the hope that kills.
It is. She was so, so good. And I agree, there is a different energy about her. This was her first top 10 win since 2018. I just think that really puts into perspective how hard she's been finding it to beat top players. But I thought she was so focused today. She served for the first set at 5-4, and there was a brilliant game. Pliskova really raised her level and broke back. But Stephens, that focus I'm talking about, was on display right there because she kept maintained a strong level and broke back, won the set, and then in the second set she just ran away and her game was flowing, and those forehands were reminiscent of her forehand when it's at her best, when she's reached the final of Roland Garros before. I love watching her play as well. And I love watching Mukova play. So count me in for that third round.
Yeah, Stevens, Mukova. What else have we got? We've got Kenin Pegula, Goff Brady, as I previously mentioned. Kenin Pegula is a good one, isn't it?
Doesn't this just say everything, though? All those players you've listed that lost and are kind of dense in the draw.
Zachary Mertens.
The depth is mind-blowing, really. I mean, they're all losses. It doesn't mean that they're not. But still, you're left with these matches. And for people like us, I think they're fantastic.
Yeah, it's quite interesting how the seeds, other than Barty, have really got through in the top half. We were talking yesterday about that very open bottom quarter where I think the only player who's reached the Grand Slam semi-final is Vondrosheva. And there's eight of them, all with a big chance of getting there. But in the top half, as you said, the matchups we would have expected it to happen are going to be happening, all the ones you've just listed. And it makes it very exciting, I think.
But having bigged up all of those matches and all the depth of talent and how many contenders there are, does it all actually feel completely irrelevant because Iga Swiatek is about 400 times better than everybody else at the moment and is basically not even losing points, let alone games? I mean, losing sets feels like a sort of, I mean, just such a distant possibility. Yeah, she played Rebecca Peterson today, who I always feel is, whenever I see her play, I think she's so much better than her ranking. She won one game today, and I thought she played quite well. she was in the rallies. She just couldn't end them. She just couldn't win the last stroke, as it were. She couldn't strike the hammer blow. And even though Peterson always seemed to be in the rallies, Swiatek knew exactly what she wanted to do. Always thinking one, two shots ahead. It was extraordinary.
I do feel sad in that way that Barty and Halep are not around, because I feel a bit robbed of those matchups. But Swiatek is just such a joy to watch. I mean, it is like going back to last October.
Who can beat her?
Well, big power players, I would have thought. Sabalenka, Serena, if they're absolutely coming out lasering the ball, I think that they could shock Swiatek. Do you know what I mean? I think that she's used to being in charge. That would be very interesting. What do you think, Matt?
I agree. I do think Stevens at her best would be fascinating, because she's got such good movement as well. And I don't know, maybe she could cut off some of those angles that Swiatek creates. But it does feel like most of the matches are on Swiatek's racket. We're going to have years of this.
Yeah, it does feel eerily like last October, doesn't it? She's so ruthless. It's terrifying how ruthless she is. It sends shockwaves through you.
Quite interested to see how she would get on if she ended up playing someone like Serena, who's such a figure in the sport, whether she'd be rattled at all by that.
I can't even imagine her rattled. I'm sure it's possible, but I find it quite hard to picture. I don't have my brain doesn't have the data to create that image at the moment. Can you see it, Matt?
No, but I guess maybe it's one of those things that you can't imagine until it happens. And Serena does have an aura still. And, you know, I mean, if they were to meet, it would be in the final.
It would be in the final.
And actually...
Ooh, that'll do. Yeah.
But the thing is, Serena's the one who struggled in finals recently. So it would be a fascinating dynamic. Ooh.
Speaking of fascinating dynamics, Sixlove Nadal, first set.
I've just had a horrible memory of a Spaniard beating a Frenchman.
That was the question I was about to go for. Is this a Sergio Bruguera, Thierry Champion situation? And if it is, will Nadal try and give him a game?
I mean, Bruguera did try and give Champagne a game, didn't he? And in his own words, he wasn't good enough to take it.
Is that what we're going to see tonight?
I mean, I'm sorry.
Give the people some soon-to-be-out-of-date tennis news, David.
It feels like it.
Matt?
Hey, he's going to get a game.
Will Nadal give him that game?
I don't think he'd give it him.
No, I think he'll
really?
Win
Really? You think he'd go love, love, and love?
One. Oh, yeah, Nadal would. There's no one there.
Wow.
Nobody watching.
There's the telly.
Right.
There's all the cameras.
Nadal's so focused. He's not thinking about that.
He doesn't know. I don't think he'd know how.
It's horrific.
You know how I'd suggested the Rocky III pep talk? Rocky did try and go out and kill a guy and got knocked out in the second round. So,
yeah. Right. Okay.
Didn't work out too well.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hello, tennis podcast listeners. David here. Now, you might know that I love a bit of cooking, and I think I'm quite good at it. But if I'm honest, even I get fed up trying to work out what to do every night. That's where Home Chef comes in. Being able to put together a delicious meal without the long prep and the cook times, well, that's pretty cool. Home Chef provides fresh ingredients and chef-designed recipes conveniently delivered to your doorstep to simplify your cooking experience. They have over 30 options a week and serve a variety of dietary needs, so you don't have to worry about what to make ahead of time. Not only is it convenient, but it's economical too. Home Chef customers save an average of $86 per month on groceries. Now, for a limited time, Home Chef is offering Tennis Podcast listeners 18 free meals plus free dessert for life and, of course, free shipping on your very first box. Go to homechef.com/tennis. That's homechef.com/tennis for 18 free meals and free dessert for life. You heard it right.
Let's move on to the men's draw and Agro Federer, our new favourite Federer.
He's 39
years old.
Federer.
He turns 40 in 2 months. And yet we saw a new dimension to Roger Federer today. I know we've seen Aggie Federer before, but I just felt like today was just a little bit of a new facet of Aggie French Federer. A sort of really petty agginess. It was so glorious. He won, by the way, in four sets against Marin Cilic. Pretty tight up until a third set tiebreak. And then Federer just rolled through the gears, rolled through that tiebreak, and then rolled through the fourth set. And that was what he was most pleased with the win. He was really buzzing, I thought, on the court and in the press conference after that victory. Really chatty and talkative and brimming with confidence. In fact, I think he's playing better than he expected to be, for sure. And the fact that he had those gears available to him today, which frankly Marin Cilic didn't, I think that brought him a lot of satisfaction. But I've spent too long talking about anything but the Federer agginess. Could somebody describe the sequence of events that brought about petty Aggie Federer?
Well, I think the gist of it was that he was trying to get used to this thing with the towel on either side of the court without a ball kid bringing them the towel. I mean, this didn't happen.
No one's ever been so befuddled by towels as Roger Federer. He can't get his head around towels.
What makes the aggro from Federer so glorious at this stage of his career is he comes across as the slightly grumpy old man who remembers it how it used to be, and suddenly we've got to do it. I mean, not that he's anti the measures, because obviously there's a good reason for them, but, you know, it didn't used to be like this. And, oh, God, I've got to go over there and get that out of the way. And they're saying I'm taking too long, and Marin Cilic seemed to be saying that he was taking too long. The umpire gave him a warning, didn't he? Gave Federer a warning. Was it a time violation? Is that what he got?
Yeah, for holding up Marin Cilic when Cilic was ready to serve.
Yeah, and of course, the great irony is that Federer had spent a not inconsiderable amount of time waiting for Cilic to stop bouncing the ball at this point.
Which he was quite happy to point out afterwards.
He was.
Yeah. Because he wasn't just Aggie on the court, and he really was Aggie on the court, in French, the umpire. It was wonderful.
He said to the umpire, "I've listened to you, now you listen to me." and he said, "You think? Well, you thought wrong."
It's like lines from Coronation Street. And just when you think, you know, he's a good friend of Marin Cilic, I think. I was expecting him to sort of back away from it in press after, say, "Oh, no, it's nothing. I love Marin. There's no beef." He sort of says with a childlike grin on his face when he's asked about it, he said, "Well, when he puts his foot down ready for the serve, he's not ready for the serve. There's still 10 bounces or something. I feel like start bouncing and I'll rock up ready to return when you're ready to serve."
Did he have a smile on his face?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Very funny.
It was really great. And, I don't want to be all boring about it, but he does raise a discussion point about whether the clock starts ticking before or after you start bouncing. Does the bounce count as part of the service motion? I personally don't think it should, but there doesn't seem to be a hard and fast rule about that. I get the feeling Federer would quite like there to be a hard and fast rule about that in future. He was, as he often is, full of interesting quotes today. He was asked about how his body is feeling on the clay, in particular how his knee is holding up, the knee that he's had the most recent surgery on. He said, "People think clay is slow. It's not that slow. If you're playing on a day when it's quite warm, then it can be faster than most hard courts." And then he talked about, he said, obviously there's other difficult things about clay, like bad bounces and sliding, etc. But, you know, he highlighted it being a bit of a sort of lazy misconception, or perhaps an out-of-date misconception, that clay is slow. It's just not as simple as that. Love 1:15:30, Gasquet yep. against Nadal. So that was Federer today. He now plays Dominic Kupfer, the German, who beat Taylor Fritz today. And he beat him fair and square, but Taylor Fritz's right knee gave out on him on the last point of the match. He hobbled to the net and he actually left the court in a wheelchair. It was a really tough one to see for a young player, and ultimately a really disappointing result for Fritz, who enjoys the clay. You know, second round against Dominic Kupfer, you'll take that, I think, if you're Taylor Fritz. That's a missed opportunity. But yeah, I think Federer also will take a third round against Kupfer, don't you think?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, he's good on clay, Kupfer, but I think if you'd said to Federer you'll get three best of five set matches at the French Open, he'd have been delighted about that. He's gaining so much information, I think, every time he steps on court. He was talking today about how he's still struggling a little bit with the defence, but that was emphasised by how hard Cilic hits the ball and really pushes you back. But in attack, he's getting increasingly sharp, I think. And if he can get through that one, he's likely to have a crack at Berrettini, and that would be a real test of where his level is, because Berrettini's playing very well. So I think so far it's been pretty much the perfect French Open for Federer that he would have wanted.
Yeah, massive test, I think. Berrettini, he looks... I know we talked in Madrid about how he's looking a different beast to how we've ever considered him in the past. I feel like he's gone up another level. You described him, David, today as looking solid and menacing all at the same time. The crowd absolutely love him in Paris, don't they? There's something happening with Berrettini in Paris, I think. Yeah. It feels like it's coming together.
He's cool. He connects. He was playing Correa. Is it Federico Correa?
Mm-hmm. Younger brother
today?
Of Guillermo.
Yeah. And I mean, they were going at each other. It was all with smiles on the face, but they were really going at each other, falling out, arguing, hitting good shots at each other. And Berrettini basically just too powerful for him, too the moment it gets on his forehand, he just takes over. And he's happy to wait on his backhand and just bunt it or chip it. And then eventually he gets around onto that forehand and it's pretty much game over. He looks fast. He looks strong. I mean, he's going to take some stopping, I think. I could see him going deep here.
Berrettini, assuming that matchup happens in the fourth round, Berrettini goes in as favourite for my money.
Mm. I mean, Federer can disrupt those players, though.
Yeah, you're right.
I think that'd be brilliant.
Watching him try to decode.
I am
mess
just having
about.
A flashback of predicting that Berrettini would cause Federer some trouble before losing the quickest ever fourth round match at Wimbledon.
Gasquet's got a game and he's got love 30.
It was a different time for Berrettini. oh my goodness me, it's 1-1, love 30 on Nadal's serve. Yeah. It's happening.
Nadal's missing quite a bit.
Yeah.
Anyway.
I'm transfixed by it now. I'm unable to podcast. Novak Djokovic was blooming brilliant today, wasn't he? He was playing out on Suzanne Longlin court. Kind of he coincided mostly with when Federer was playing on Chatrier, so he kind of got eclipsed a bit, but just went about his business. And similarly to Rebecca Peterson, I don't think Cuevas played badly today. He gave a good account of himself, but Djokovic, 1 in 3 sets, was just, sublime, I thought.
I think that's the best tennis I've seen in the men's draw so far, this tournament. The racket was like a trampoline. The way the ball comes off it, you don't think of Djokovic as a power player necessarily. He breaks you down with accumulation of blows. Well, when he's really timing the ball, he is powerful. And Cuevas felt that today because Cuevas was, as like you said, Catherine, he was playing well. But he got handily beaten. And Djokovic just looks in a really good place.
Well, the place he's in is a third-round matchup with Ricardis Berankis, which I'm going to call a good draw. Is anybody going to disagree with me?
You just want to throw the shade back to your old pal.
No. All due respect, he's earned his place there. Is Ricardis Berankis for a place in the second week a good draw?
I think it's a great draw.
Yes. So that matchup will be happening in a couple of days' time. I'll tell you what, today was a good day for the movement.
Oh.
Maybe not the original movement, but what we might call the second wave of the movement.
About fourth wave.
Second waves are very much in fashion at the moment.
The movement used to be what the next gen is now, I think, isn't it?
Oh, I've completely lost track of that. Give me names. The movement.
Back in the day, the movement was Ferrero and all that.
Yeah, so there was the movement, which was that. Then there was another generation, which was like really good: Nadal, Djokovic, Murray. Then there was next gen.
Okay.
And now we're on.
I'm talking about the lost gen, Matt.
No, no.
Oh,
I'm talking about the modern movement. I was talking about the modern movement, as in the movement reincarnated, which is the next gen, i.e. your Tsitsipas, your Zverev, your Rublev. Now, you might call Alcaraz and Musetti, who both won today.
And Sinner.
You might call them the second wave of the next gen, because they are significantly younger. Do you see what I mean?
Yeah.
I mean, we don't have to put everything in a COVID analogy. But,
I did think, can we come up with another one? Another way of describing them.
The new wave.
Yes.
Anyway, which is a very long-winded, not particularly successful way of making the point that Carlos Alcaraz and Lorenzo Musetti both won today. Alcaraz beat Basilashvili. Musetti beat Nishioka. First time in the third round of a slam for both. Now, for Alcaraz, he's the youngest man to reach round three at Roland Garros since 17-year-old friend of the pod, Andrei Medvedev, in 1992. He's also now the youngest man to reach the third round at any Grand Slam since 17-year-old Rafael Nadal at the 2004 Australian Open. He's happening, Matt. He's happening, and you were an early adopter.
Feels great.
You were the earliest adopter I know.
And I believe it's the first time there were three teenagers into round three at Roland Garros, Musetti, Alcaraz and Sinner, since 2001, which was the original movement time, right? That was Federer, Roddick and Robredo.
Oh, my God, Robredo being part of the movement.
He was in qualifying this week.
Yes.
I watched it. He was trying his heart out.
Still moving, just about.
He's great. I love him. He's about 39.
Yeah.
Anyway, carry on.
Who have they got next? I mean, Musetti is playing his first slam, I think, isn't he?
So Musetti has Cecchinato next, countryman, former semi-finalist, of course, but... You know, winnable.
Mm,
and Alcaraz has Struff.
I would say the same. Yeah,
tough but winnable.
Tough but winnable, yeah. Mm. And Sinner, I think, has a very winnable one as well. So they're coming.
Sinner plays Immer, which, again, send your jokes in. You've got 2 days' time to come up with a one-liner for Sinner versus Immer. Immer beat an injured Gael Monfils today. Really bizarre match. First top 20 win for him. It looked very much like Gael Monfils was going to retire after the first set. But in fact, he went off court for a medical timeout, came back, broke immediately. Looked like sort of classic Monfils chaos was going to ensue. He did win that second set, but then the challenge tapered off. He was very hampered on serve, and Immer did win through in the end. We lost Aslan Karatsev today. Barty aside, that was the biggest shock. Now, I say it was a good day for the movement. I don't know what movement Philipp Kohlschreiber is a part of, but it's a moving.
Yeah.
It's moving a bit slower than it used to, but at 37 years old, he's beaten Aslan Karatsev today, and that counts as a massive shock these days.
He was really good, Catherine. I'm telling you, I watched this because I'd got a vested interest having got Karatsev in my quarterfinal lineup. So he's in my bad books. But tell you what, Kohlschreiber took him to the cleaners today. He really did. He just carved him apart. He strikes a lovely ball and he just redirects it so well. He's just a clever, seasoned player who maybe lacked the weapons to be and the serve and the size to be able to go any higher than he already did. And he's had a really good career. Let's not forget he beat Andy Roddick at the Australian Open when Roddick was at his absolute best. But this was a shock given what we've seen this year with Karatsev. I wasn't anticipating it. And very, very disappointed in you, Aslan.
He's disappointed in himself, I think, if his remonstrations or anything to go by.
Oh, the racket smash was almost worth the win.
he tried.
Smacked it on the side of the court. I mean, actually, it was a bit dangerous what he did because he smashed it on the railing right next to the spectators, and then that wasn't enough, so he just destroyed it into the ground twice.
Mm. He tried his trick from the Australian Open of... go on, Catherine.
I went to toilet.
Yes, and it worked for a set this time, but not enough to get him fully back into the match. Someone who will be pleased about that result, I think, is Diego Schwartzman, because he's been manhandled by Karatsev twice this year, and now he gets to play 37-year-old Philipp Kohlschreiber instead.
That's... Manhandled by Russia's secret weapon. Poor Diego. So that's your roundup of day five at Roland Garros. What have you got to look forward to on day six? Well, Philippe Chatrier starts with Azarenka against Madison Keys, who we just don't mention Madison Keys, do we? It's extraordinary. Mm. She wins tomorrow. We promise to mention her. She'll be
who's winning that? Do you think Keys can win?
I think Azarenka. I think Keys can win. She's got a better pedigree at this tournament.
She beat Leila Fernandez in round two, and I thought that was a really good win. I would have probably thought Fernandez might win that on form, but then I read a quote from Fernandez who said, on a scale of 1 to 10, I was a 0. Which, I mean, great quote, but...
Wow.
A bit alarming.
Not even a 1, and it's a scale of 1 to 10.
Yeah.
Wow. Then it's Zverev against Laszlo Zverev. Then not before 4 p.m. locals, Serena Williams against Danielle Collins, match of the day for my money. Really can't wait for that. And then not before 9 p.m. local time, Tsitsipas against Isner. I don't care who you think will win. What time do you think it'll finish?
I mean, that could be early hours. Really good.
Yeah, will that finish before midnight?
Well, if it goes beyond three sets, no.
No. Yeah, interesting scheduling. Then on Suzanne Longlen, it is Rybakina against Vizhnina. Then Fanini against Federico Del Bonis. Don't make me regret everything I said about you yesterday, Fabio. Then it's Opelka against Medvedev. And then it's Polina Herzog against Marketa Vondroušová. Kortsamun Mathieu starts with Pavlyuchenkova against Sabalenka. Then Nishikori aiming to go fewer than five sets, or maybe not. Maybe he wants to go five sets against Henri Laaksonen. Then Steve Johnson against Pablo Carreño Busta. And then it's Badosa against Bogdan. So that is tomorrow's schedule for you. So a couple of last bits of news. The first one from today is that the positive COVID-19 tests returned for two doubles players. They haven't been officially named by the tournament, but Nikola Mektić and Mateo Pavic, the top seeds, have been removed from the draw. Really tough for them. They've been practically unbeatable this year, Mektić and Pavic. A new partnership, all Croatian partnership for this year, obviously targeting the Olympics. Just incredibly unfortunate for them. Since the beginning of the tournament on the 24th of May, 2,446 tests have been performed on players and their teams. And this was the first occurrence in which the tournament organisers had to remove players in accordance with their health protocol. So, well, it's desperately unfortunate for those two overall, touch wood. That is a pretty encouraging set of statistics on the COVID-19 front. So long may that continue. And the second bit of news is rather upsetting, I'm afraid, with the very sad news that Bill Scanlon has died. He was a former top 10 ATP player, an NCAA singles champion. He was well known for beating John McEnroe at the 1983 US Open. And according to Chris Clary at the New York Times, is best remembered in tennis for recording the men's tour's first golden set in February 22nd, 1983. He didn't lose a point to Marcus Hochevar in the second set of a first round match in Delray Beach. It was the only one for 29 years until Yaroslava Shvedova did it at Wimbledon. And I remember Bill Scanlon's name coming up around the time that Shvedova did that golden set at Wimbledon. Very sadly, Bill Scanlon died of cancer aged 64 yesterday. And in the words of Richard Evans, friend of the pod and esteemed tennis journalist and broadcaster, he said, "Bill Scanlon's death will be devastating to all who knew him. Such a bright, energised, amusing figure on the ATP Tour. Brilliant player, blessed with rare talent. My thoughts are with his family. R.I.P. Bill." So, lovely words from Richard Evans. And, we would echo that. Absolutely a sad loss to the tennis world. We've got mascots. I did better today for Zeus. Everybody else failed miserably. So,
who did you get today?
I got Sloane Stephens.
Oh, well done.
I told you, I'm all in. I'm all in on Sloane Stephens, me and Zeus. David let Rogue down. Matt let Scousel Mousel down.
Stop smiling.
Billie Jean's let everybody down today. She did so well. To be fair, she's kept her mouth shut since that one indiscretion. So improvement for Billie Jean and her sponsor, Billie Jean King. Actual words I get to say. We've got shout outs. But before that, I just want to remind you that we have a tennis podcast merch shop. T-shirts are very much available. You can have a tennis podcast T-shirt, a tennis relived T-shirt, an I Love Tennis T-shirt, or an On the Boat T-shirt. My mum has an On the Boat T-shirt, despite, in her own words, never, ever wanting to go near a bloody boat. So, yeah. So you can get yourself on the boat without ever having to go on a boat. Lucky you. Yeah. So head to the shop. There's details in our newsletter. If you're not subscribed to the newsletter, what are you doing? It's great. Get yourself subscribed. Our executive producer is Chris Albert Lee. He's a top bloke. He never lets us down. Matt, who are our shout-outs for?
Caroline Dove.
Oh. All right, Caroline.
That's very poetic.
My favourite type of bird.
Right.
Is that a thing? Are we supposed to have favourite types of
bird? I don't have a list.
Well, I have. So,
right,
Caroline.
Okay.
Thanks a lot.
Well, that's something that will be consuming my thoughts for the rest of the evening. What's your favourite type of bird?
It's the only one that sponsors the podcast, isn't it?
Right, so. Okay. Next up, Matt.
It'd be funny if I came out with, you know, Ian Hawke or something. but no, Dennis Curley.
Oh, hello.
My favourite type of chocolate bar, Curly Whirly.
I can't follow that. Hello, Dennis. Like Shapovalov. Thanks for your support.
And last one today is friend of the pod, Sophie Smith.
Oh, hey.
Hi, Sophie.
And, hello, Sophie.
And also a shout out for Tilly, who is one of our youngest listeners, I think. Sophie's daughter.
Oh, lovely.
Thank you so much.
Thank you, Sophie. You're a great supporter of the pod, and we much appreciate it. So that was your Day 5 French Open Tennis Podcast. We have valiantly struggled through the opening two rounds. We get to kick off round 3 in earnest tomorrow. David, Matt, thank you. Thank you for listening, and we'll speak to you tomorrow.
Hi, this is Craig Robinson from Ways to Win. And support for this podcast comes from Invesco QQQ, the official ETF of the NCAA. Invesco QQQ is proud to sponsor this episode and even prouder to provide access to innovation for the last 25 years. Basketball has had innovations over the years, too. We're seeing the game played in new ways every day. Learn more at Invesco.com/QQQ. Let's rethink possibility. Invesco Distributors, Inc.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.